This is the best of two pros and a cup of Joe with LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox on Fox Sports Radio.
Yeah, LeVar's grooving.
He is right now.
He is grooving.
Which South Side, LeVar?
It doesn't right even now matter. Just know that the South Side is generally the funnest side.
You know? Oh, come on. I know what you did there.
Hey, Brady, it's because you're my little O brother. You know what I mean? I got to get my O brothers off the out the gate quick. You know, we got to get out
well,
the gate quick.
Hey, you know where Thousand Oaks is in relation to L.A.? It's way north.
There it is. That guy right there, Brady.
That gives you any indication, folks, that Jonas is anywhere near the south side.
You wouldn't last 2 minutes in my world, homeboy.
Oh. I'm telling you, I might get a concussion from a golf ball.
Not in the 805. Not in the 805.
You know what might happen? I might trip on one of those beautifully paved sidewalks they have all around there.
Big talk from the king of the rolling estates of Dublin, Ohio. You got to see this place. It's just disgusting.
Dublin's as flat as your ass.
Gated communities, you name it. It is just a revolting wealth flowing out of there.
As flat as Jonas's ass. He's been squatting years.
That is not true. I did him yesterday and got hurt in the process.
Put on some more weight, pal.
All right.
He said he was doing it with a jock strap
boy
on some party socks. That was it. And a headband.
Yeah. That's what we do. That's how you know if you're going low enough.
Said Rocky Balboa is his inspiration.
which, by the way, that movie is on. Get in the studio. So we've got ourselves the story in football that continues to keep on giving. Because every time you think that there's the latest development at Notre Dame or we've seen the latest story that's come out, Brian Kelly makes the rounds, does a hit on the Dan Patrick Show yesterday, only to be followed up later on by Notre Dame not wasting much time, Brady Quinn. And they've identified that, there's a couple of guys, they're going to go ahead and stay put. The players seem pretty excited about it, but it seems like Notre Dame's found their guy to move forward and sort of close the book on the Brian Kelly era.
Yeah, so let's just quickly go through the process of the last 72 hours. Obviously, a lot became public. Jonas was calling for the words of Brian Kelly to his team. We were able to eventually get that. That was out there. And then it was coupled by then Brian Kelly speaking to LSU. And I think when you listen to both, what it comes down to is, and you can hear him, because Brian's smart. He knows this stuff's going to come out and be public. You can hear him give his support for the players and team at Notre Dame. And at the same time, you can hear him tell those LSU players why he left Notre Dame to come to LSU. Meaning, he talks about, for example, being able to recruit the best athletes around the country. He didn't mention academics or education. All right. He talks about the president, athletic director being the best in the country, unlimited resources. So he kind of took some veiled shots at the athletic director at Notre Dame, Jack Swarbrick, almost kind of painting a picture of, hey, I came to you with some request after the season for my team for what I feel like they needed, and you didn't satisfy that. So it kind of started with all this stuff becoming public, right? Now, the only thing I'll go back on and say, he says that he thinks this Notre Dame football team's a top four team. Well, dude, if they're a top four team, then tell LSU to wait. There is nothing. I think there's been a misconception.
That's a great point.
I think there's been a misconception by a lot of people out there about my feelings on this. I don't care if Brian Kelly left Notre Dame to go take $95 million somewhere else or go have a chance to win a national championship. I don't care about that. I listened to Colin Cowherd go on this whole spiel about stuff with LeBron James, and no, it's because they left, that's why. No, there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. I didn't care. I grew up a Cavs fan. I didn't care when LeBron left Cleveland. It was the way he did it. And part of the reason I didn't care because I just moved to South Florida, so I knew I got to see more of those Miami Heat games. But, so selfishly, I digress. But it's not about if someone leaves. Sometimes they're doing you a favor. But it's about how they go about doing it. I couldn't disagree with that flimsy, discussion point anymore. But let's fast forward then to what happened Tuesday night. When the College Football Playoff Committee came out And Gary Barta admitted that the instability on the coaching staff at Notre Dame could potentially keep them from being in the college football playoff. That sounded off an alarm. And in part because you've got a group of seniors and a lot of players that experienced a lot of success over the past 5 years that they don't want to go out like that. They don't want to have their chance of playing potentially for a national championship be impacted by instability. And so the athletic director, Jack Swerbrick in Notre Dame, ended up meeting with Marcus Freeman, who gave him a compelling pitch for why he should be the next head coach. And that pitch, coupled with a few things that Jack Swerbrick wanted, for example, Tommy Rees having to come back as the OC. You know, Mike Elston coming back to call the defense at Notre Dame so Marcus Freeman can be freed up to be the head coach. All of those things had to be accomplished in order for this thing to move forward and keep the majority of what was there before Brian Kelly left intact. And so Jack Swerbrick, who I don't want to say went back on what he said publicly on his word, but it was all accelerated because of some of the support from the recruits and players for Marcus Freeman, but more so because they wanted to give this class that's been really successful at Notre Dame a chance to be potentially in for the college football playoff. So they've got everything in line now. They'll finish up the contract details today. But that's all essentially how this whole thing worked out. And when everyone asks, like, well, is it going to be a good hire? How's this going to work out? They got to be excited about it. I don't know. I think keeping continuity is a good thing. But whenever a head coach leaves, the next head coach, as much as you want to keep, you know, the same, you've got to make it your own. So Marcus Freeman now has to figure out his identity as a head coach in Notre Dame, not a defensive coordinator or defensive play caller. And he's got to do that, not having any experience doing it before. So this is one of the biggest stages you can imagine in football, not only college football, but in football. And he's going to have to cut his teeth now in this position. And so it's going to be interesting to see whether or not it works out.
Let me ask you this, and you may not know the answer to this, but if Marcus Freeman, if they weren't in a rush, say, to make a hire or thinking like, okay, we need to show some stability because we want to give this senior class a chance if there's an opportunity to play in a college football playoff and chase the national championship, how much serious consideration would Marcus Freeman have had gotten if there wasn't a rush needed to make a hire right now?
There would have been serious consideration. There's no doubt about it. You know, when he got there, they kind of felt like just from the year he's been there, he had the sort of persona that would be a head coach. They just didn't know if it would be one where Brian Kelly's there for a number of years and then turns it over to Marcus Freeman, or if it was Marcus Freeman being at Notre Dame for a little bit. You know, if say, for example, this scenario had played out. If Notre Dame had waited longer, I know for a fact it would have targeted Luke Fickle or Matt Campbell, which, oh, by the way, they didn't even have a conversation with.
Wow.
They didn't even have a conversation with. So if that gives you any indication of, you know, when Jack Swerbrick said he was going to lead the search, he did, and he never even put together an advisory, none of that. He basically heard what the committee said. He met with a bunch of people and talked to a bunch of people there at the university and wanted to keep the continuity and keep everything in-house. So he would have been considered. He probably would have interviewed. But it would have been amongst the other two names I just mentioned, Luke Fickle, Matt Campbell, and a bunch of others, because it is Notre Dame. And it is a position that is valued. And there's people even at the NFL level who are poking around a little bit interested.
Jeez. What a crazy just 2-3 day stretch for Notre Dame, man. And then Tommy Rees obviously deciding to stay there. And I know he talked to the team and just said, I don't have any details to give you. And you mentioned they're going to iron out, you know, contracts and all that stuff. I just think for anybody that's defending Brian Kelly from the standpoint of, well, you know, he's got a right to leave. Absolutely. But the fact that you've seen top assistants, guys not follow him, players speak out about it, and just the overwhelming shock and disappointment from people at Notre Dame with the way that it was handled, that tells you everything you need to know. All the stories that came out that people were holding onto or having in their back pocket, that tells you everything you need to know about it. And just, I look at a guy like Tommy Rees and I think, but it might be better for his career if he did take the job at LSU, because he could always be welcome back at Notre Dame. But if he goes to LSU, it's the SEC. He can show that he can do it in a different place. The fact that he even decided to say, tells me that there was something that they felt wrong about the way Brian Kelly left. So people that are defending him, it's like, look at the people closely involved and their reaction to it. And that, I think, tells you a larger story about how the whole thing was handled. I don't get it.
He was with them on the recruiting trail. I mean, when that whole thing happened, he was with them.
And had no idea.
Didn't know.
Jesus.
And so I think that caught some people off guard. Ultimately, I don't know that you know, was what led this to all this. I mean, that's more on the fault of LSU. Because LSU had been working on this even before the Stanford game. And along with a couple of other teams, I told you, Southern Cal was interested. And those talks didn't get very far because, you know, BK didn't want to – I think that would have kind of – going to USC from Notre Dame after being the winningest coach, that would have maybe tarnished some of that legacy just because it's a rival and it means that much. So that wasn't willing to happen. But LSU is a little bit different. And I feel like he feels like there's a better chance of him winning a national championship given their recent track record. You know, when you say, hey, Nick Saban, Les Miles, Ed Orgeron all won one, and those are the last three head coaches at LSU, you could make the case that next to Nick Saban, Brian Kelly's like the most winningest coach in college football. And that's not an opinion. That's a fact. If you look at what he did coming from Grand Valley to Cincinnati to Notre Dame, there's no one who's won more games in college football since 2000. It's Nick Saban, and then it's Brian Kelly. So I think he looks at this, too, as that's the last thing on his resume. He wants to be known as a guy who was a winner and who eventually won a national championship, and he feels like that's the best place to be able to do it. But again, I go back to the way he went about doing it. That's the issue with all this. It's not that he left. It's not. First off, I don't know that his contract would have been extended anyway, or he would have received any extension that would have extended the length of what this is at LSU. So the reason why you saw all of this is because I think it's more of a frustration that everyone was left in the dark. And before you even have a chance to know if you have a shot to play for a national championship, and if you really believe this is a top four team, then tell LSU, hey, I'm going to be your head coach, but you got to wait a week, okay? I know the recruiting signing period's coming up December 15th, but you know what? You know, that's not going to make the difference in whether or not we're going to be able to win or lose, you know, in the future. It's going to be about me making sure I do what I need to do before I leave. And so let's wait to see. And if I'm not in the playoff, I'll come there right away. I won't coach the New Year's Six game. I did it to Cincinnati. I'll do it to Notre Dame. I'll come leave right now. But let me see first if we don't slide into the playoff and have a shot for playing for a national championship. That would have been the way to do it.
That would have been the way.
That would have been the way.
100%. That would have been the classier way of the more responsible, respectable way of doing it. I agree with that. But I like Freeman as the hire. I really do, and I'm pulling for him. You guys actually came up together. I think you're only like maybe a little bit ahead of him.
I'm a couple years older than him.
Yeah, a little bit ahead of him.
Yeah, he's a couple years behind me.
But, so. I mean, he's an Ohio guy, Big mm-hmm. Ten guy.
Huber Heights.
You know, yeah, so I'm pulling for him. I mean, I've been a fan of him. I obviously watch Notre Dame because they're like Penn State, so I pull for him, watch Notre Dame. I've loved the job that he's done. I look for development in players. That's like the biggest thing I look for when I watch football is how developed the players are. And you can see how these players develop, you know, during the course of this season. And so to me, I mean, I like what he did. I like his work on defense, but I agree with you. It is going to come down to what is going to be the culture and the identity that he's able to create, and can he uphold it? Is that you know, the levels of who's subordinates, who aren't, can they create that pattern of how they're going to go about their business and be successful? That's generally one of the hardest things. And then being what you need to be, being the president and talking to the parents, talking to the community, yeah, pulling everything together. A lot of the off field is what's going to be the biggest thing that Freeman is going to have to overcome.
Well, that's the thing, is I don't think he's going to have to overcome any of that. He's got that in his bag. He's charismatic. He's smart. He's going to be able to talk to parents, recruits, and all that, talk to the alumni base and donors. To me, the most difficult part of this as a 35-year-old, and you've got, think about USC and Notre Dame right now. You've got an under 40 coach in Lincoln Riley. You've got a Notre Dame now, a 35-year-old and a 29-year-old OC in Tommy Rees, like, and Marcus Freeman. I mean, it's young, man. I mean, yeah. It's crazy that you're turning over that big of a position to young folks. And we've seen it other places where it's been successful, right? Sean McVay, you know, he falls into that category. And so you've seen other guys have success. I look at it and I go, he's going to have to learn how to manage people, like his own staff.
Yeah.
Because it's different when you're a head coach versus a DC. But no, I like Marcus. I really do. I'll be curious to see you know, how it builds from here and how he puts his own stamp on it. But I think given the circumstances, this is the best decision that Jack could have made in these circumstances if he didn't want to wait and if he didn't want to be patient about how all this is going to work moving forward.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Right now, we're going to welcome in the great Albert Breer, a senior NFL reporter for the MMQB. You can get him on Twitter, at Albert Breer. Albert, hold on a second. We're just having some little technical difficulty. Give me 1 second here. I'm not going to ask him about why
Ohio State.
I'm not going to ask him about why he told us to take Ohio State minus 8.5. Sorry, Albert.
Oh.
I just needed to clear up some house cleaning.
I've been waiting to do this all year. Albert, I've been waiting to do this all year.
Albert, what's happening? Good morning.
I want to make sure I called into the right place. This is the Iowa Hawkeye fan club.
Yes. That is correct.
That's what I thought, right?
Yep. Well done.
Yep.
Well done, sir. Yeah.
How we feeling? Was that how frustrating was that game to watch, or did you just come to terms with it?
Guys, there's nothing more frustrating than watching your team get run on like that. I mean, it's like it is way worse to get run on for 300 yards than it is to get thrown on for 300 yards. And I think anybody who's watched, you know, 10 minutes of football in their life and rooted for anybody knows that. And so, I mean, hopefully at least I think it's going to lead to some changes. But, it sucked. It sucked. And you know, it's a feeling I really hadn't had.
For so long.
In 18 years.
Yeah.
If you think about
there's
it.
Your flex.
The 11 game was like an interim coach. It was Luke Fickell as the interim coach, and we were more or less on probation. The last time they beat us legitimately, the game was in standard def. It's been that long.
Wow. So, humble flex.
Yeah, good for you.
Done.
Hey, listen,
you haven't lost
it. It was a tough experience. I'll tell you what, though. I mean, the victory lap they've taken is unbelievable. I have never seen. I mean, I'll usually pound my chest for a day. It's still going on. It's like, oh God.
So what you're saying is
that's how it works, man. Yeah, they get to do it for the next year,
the whole year.
I know.
Hey, Albert. We just came out of a segment where I basically said some horrible things as it applies to Robert Griffin III. And listen, I want it to be clear. I'm not taking a personal attack at RG3 for releasing that he's going to do a tell-all book. But, you know, my contingency here is that isn't it understood now? Doesn't everyone know the type of person that the owner of the football team in Washington is now? Like, it's not – you're not giving any stunning revelations. And no matter what it is that you say, you're not giving any stunning revelations as to what we now perceive that person to be or what we perceive that environment to be. I mean, isn't this a safe move for Robert Griffin III to kind of detail why his career maybe didn't go the way that it was supposed to go?
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to promote a book first and foremost. So, you know, I mean, more power to him for that. Like, you know, you got something you want to get out there, you want to monetize it. You know, I can understand, like, why you would tease a book the way that he's teasing a book, because, you know, I think he probably had some stories in there that people are going to be interested in. And it wasn't, I mean, I covered those teams. You know, I was around those teams a lot, LeVar.
Yep. So,
2012 and 2013, 2014. And I remember how contentious it got. Not just between, you know, ownership and the people in the building, but ownership and the head coach, like Shanahan, ownership and, you know, the with it, their involvement with the quarterback situation. So, like, I know what you're saying. I would much rather see what the NFL found on Dan Snyder and what's going on in that building than what Robert Griffin says. Like, that's what I want to know. I want to know what, you know, a federal prosecutor went in there and found out. Like, I think we have a right. I think the general public has a right to, you know, have at least an idea of what they found, because the public trust between, you know, between the different, you know, different cities, regions, and these teams. But, you know, I don't know how much what Robert Griffin's going to say is going to be that out of bounds, because so much of, I mean, we've already found, we already know so much about what happened
right
there. And, you know, really, I'd like to see what, like, a neutral party went in there and found, you know, like what Beth Wilkinson, who the NFL hired, and independently ran that investigation. I want to see what, like, just somebody who doesn't have an axe to grind found. It's a little obviously, like, there'll be some good stories in the Robert Griffin book, but I mean, obviously you have to understand that that's coming from a certain perspective too. I think RG3 still feels like they screwed up his career, and so it's going to come from that perspective.
Right. Yeah.
Albert, I want to ask you just more regards to what we're seeing in the landscape of the NFL with head coaches have to be asked about potentially taking college jobs. Like, do you think we're getting to a point, because of how much college coaches are being paid, that some of these NFL organizations either are going to have to ante up or potentially risk losing a head coach who is going to get that 10-year, $95 or $100 million contract from a university?
Yeah, Brady, I think that there's good, absolutely going to be an effect. And I think you already saw it with Cliff, right? Like, so Cliff's done a really good job in Arizona. 3 years, they've gotten better each year. They're in position to contend for a Super Bowl this year. And he did a four-year deal, and he doesn't have a contract past 2022. And so, you know, wanting to capitalize on where you're at makes sense that you would seek out leverage. And it's hard to do that because you can't really do that with other NFL teams, because you'd be breaking the tampering rules, right? So how do you do that? Well, there's an opening in Oklahoma. I coached in that conference. I played in that conference. Like, why not just see if they're interested? And so, like, I think you're going to see a little bit more of that. And then I think the overarching effect, which is more interesting to me, Brady, is that, like, I think you have to look at what USC and LSU actually did, right? So, like, normally you would see one of those schools go and get maybe, like, a coordinator in another, you know, blue blood, or a head coach from a lower-level Power 5 or a Group of 5 school. And USC and LSU basically said, to hell with that. We're just going to go steal another Blue Bloods head coach, right? Like, LSU, we're going to go steal Notre Dame's head coach. USC, we're going to go steal Oklahoma's head coach. So how could that have an effect in the NFL? Well, I think, you know, because one of the reasons that happened in college football is because there was a little bit of a shallow, I would say, pool of candidates this year in college. I think the same thing exists in the NFL. So I think the effect in the NFL now, Brady, is going to be, instead of teams just exclusively looking at other teams' coordinators or college coaches, I think they're going to start looking at each other's head coaches. And so if you're the Chicago Bears, do you say, screw it, let's go get Sean Payton out of New Orleans, who doesn't have a quarterback down there right now? If you're the Raiders, do you say, let's go see if Mike Tomlin would be interested? Ben Roethlisberger's retiring. How long is Kevin Colbert going to be there? So I think that that could wind up being the effect, is that, like, some NFL teams that have openings may look at it and say, let's go do what USC and LSU just did and forget about going and taking a chance on a younger guy. Let's go get an established guy from one of our peers.
He's Albert Breer joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Two Pros and a Cup of Joe here on FSR. You can get him on Twitter at Albert Breer. Albert, you mentioned Sean Payton in New Orleans. I wanted to ask you, because Taysom Hill obviously is going to get the start tonight. Trevor Siemian struggled. I mean, we've been pounding the table for Ian Book. Why not give him a look at least? But, I mean, moving forward, what's the plan there? Is it going to be, let's find somebody in the draft, or is Sean Payton and New Orleans going to take a swing at one of these potential big-name quarterbacks that are going to be available, whether it be a Deshaun or a Russ or an Aaron Rodgers in the offseason?
Yeah, and I think your teams that, like, we presume are going to be involved, right? Like, so there were four really kind of in the Deshaun thing over the summer. That was Philly, Carolina, Denver, and Miami. And I think you're going to have some new teams that will be involved. Pittsburgh, potentially, the Giants, maybe the Browns, the Saints. And I think what these teams are going to find is that the and Brady, you know this, you're around the college game, you know, every week. I don't think the talent pool quarterback coming out of college is quite the same this year as it's been the last couple
of years. Oh, come on. Come on, Albert. Don't disrespect my guy, Kenny Pickett, like that. Come on.
Well, all right. Outside of Kenny Pickett, how about that?
There you go. Yeah. Now we can talk.
All right. All right. Well, and so I think a lot of these teams, I think what's going to happen is teams are going to be looking at veteran options, and they're the obvious three, right? Like, so is Rodgers available? Is Watson available? Is Wilson available? Watson, I think, will be available. Wilson, I think, probably will. Rodgers will see. And then I think once you get past that, where things could get interesting, guys, is could there be a game of musical chairs a little bit where teams sort of move quarterbacks around to get, like, quote-unquote, fresh starts other places, right? So could the Saints potentially look at a guy they really like coming out a few years like a Baker Mayfield? Like, if the Browns make the decision, we're going to go after Deshaun Watson. Well, now they can't have Watson and Mayfield both on the roster, so they got to go find somebody who liked Mayfield coming out a few years ago. And could someone like Sean Payton say, you know what? The first 4 years of Baker Mayfield isn't that different than the first 4 years of Drew Brees in San Diego. So maybe I take a shot on somebody like that. So I think we've all focused on these three guys, Watson, Wilson, and Rodgers. But I actually think like there could be a bigger game of musical chairs that could go on too with, again, guys like Baker Mayfield, maybe Jimmy Garoppolo, where you see teams moving quarterbacks around the league to kind of get fresh starts in new places. And I certainly think the Saints would be in the mix for something like that if they're not in at the high end of the market because they've got cap issues going into 2022.
AB, a team that isn't doing that right now is the Dallas Cowboys. But you get a coach that's now out with COVID. They've got a losing streak, a healthy one going right now. How important is it for them in a game where we're actually asking questions? Hey, let's see if another quarterback can make it work with New Orleans. How important is it for this Dallas team to have a good showing and win this game tonight?
Oh, it's a big game, Avar. I mean, like, you look at where they're at. They're 7-4. Washington's only two games back now. Washington won the division last year. And, I mean, those players on that Washington team, they don't think Dallas is much better than them, you know? So, I think coming out and playing, like, a representative game tonight, you know, coming off of, you know, losing to the Raiders on Thanksgiving is enormous for where this team is and where they stand going forward. They've been through a lot, you know? Like, they lost Dak earlier in the year for a game. You know, obviously they've had the situation with the receiver room over the last few weeks, you know, and Amari Cooper getting COVID and CeeDee Lamb getting banged up. And so, you know, I just think for kind of where they stand in the division, they've lost so much ground over the last two or three weeks where it looked like a fait accompli a month ago that they were just going to run away with the East. Now they're not in that position so much anymore. I mean, think about this, guys. They could come out of week 13 only up a game on Washington. You know, they still got to play them. So I think this is a huge game for Dallas. And I'll tell you this, too. I mean, for Dan Quinn, it could be a big opportunity also. You know, we talk about like a shallow candidate pool. Well, Dan Quinn's done a great job with that defense, developing young guys like Micah Parsons and Trayvon Diggs there. You know, could this be a nice showcase for Dan Quinn, too, who, by the way, took a team to a Super Bowl 5 years ago? We all know what happened when they got there, but he got the team to the Super Bowl 5 years ago. I think it's a good opportunity for Dan Quinn also.
He is the senior NFL reporter at the MMQB. Get him on Twitter, at Albert Breer. Albert, always appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for the time. Let's do it again next week. And
thanks, Albert.
Sorry, LeVar, I had to take a shot at you when it came to Ohio State there. I apologize.
No. Hey, go Hawkeyes, guys.
Yeah, go Hawkeyes.
Like that.
good chat with Albert there. By the way, I do like how he pointed out that Michigan's been having a victory lap. I mean, it's been a long time since they beat Ohio State.
It's been a long time since a Big Ten team has beat Ohio State.
Yeah. So, like, you know, people are going to celebrate. I mean, that's you know, par for the course, I think. You know, and it was a big moment for them. So they gotta you know, celebrate while they can. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byard. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week, we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Beyer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is what we're going to do. We have drawn numbers. It is our Detroit Lions first win fantasy draft. There are six members of the show, myself, LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, Roberto, Eddie, Lee DeLapp, and we are all going to pick which game we think the Lions are going to get their first win in. There are six remaining. We've got the schedule here. We have already drawn, so we have the draft order ready to go. We will start with Lee, then Roberto, then Brady, then Eddie, then LeVar, and of course, I'm last. So what a shock. I'm sure Brady had nothing to do with that behind the scenes. So let's get it started here.
I had nothing to do with that.
Right.
You want the shaft,
yeah.
All right? You need the shaft. You literally look for it at any
you're
possible
always
chance you can.
Getting screwed over.
Some people would say pull up a chair.
It makes good radio, he'll say.
Yeah.
You know, Jonas taking the shaft and getting screwed over. Makes for great radio.
Or pull up a chair. All right, so here we go. Lead the lap. You get first pick here
of the remaining games for the
Detroit Lions.
He's not going to get it.
So what are you going to pick here, Lee?
He's not going to get it.
They're only going to win one, and it's going to be this game. The day after Christmas, week 16, at Atlanta. Atlanta's been playing awful at home. That's where they get their win against the Falcons.
Damn it.
Nope.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Not a good
one. I can
see
that.
That's a good one.
Don't co-sign
them. All right, Roberto, when you're done looking at the weather, what do we got? What do we got for for pick number two?
Well, I would go week 16, but since my good buddy Coop the Loop's going to the game on week 14 and I'm dropping him off at the airport for that game, and since I hate the Donkeys, I'm going to say it's against the Donkeys, week 14, Lions at Broncos.
Right,
I want to see Coop's face when after I pick him up from the airport. It'll be great.
The weird thing is like you guys are picking two road wins. Like you're saying there's no home field advantage for Detroit?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
They lost on a 65-yard field goal.
Come on.
No, there's no home advantage. They lost to the Bears. No, there's no home advantage. All right, Brady Quinn is up.
Yeah. Well, this doesn't make really for many pickings for me. I think you could pick Seattle, but I that's a tough place to play, and who knows at that point what's happened with that team. So I guess maybe we'll call it a New Year's hangover, right? Week 17, the Lions are playing at Seattle.
You're going to go
maybe
with
there's
that?
Some disgruntlement with Russell. Yeah, I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go ahead and say week 17 at Seattle. I hate the fact that it's a road game.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you just busted their balls about picking a road game.
You know what? All right, screw it. I'm going to week 18.
Damn it!
Week 18 in Green Bay versus the Packers.
That's the best
because
one.
At that point, you're it's going to be completely locked
up. That's the one I want.
You are the biggest.
That's what I'm taking.
Damn
yank
it.
Master of them all, bro. Like,
yep. Damn
I just jerked Jonas all around.
All
I just joked Jonas all
and
around
me.
And gave him the shaft
damn
again.
Well, I ain't going to go that
That's
far.
The one I wanted, man. Right. I think Green Bay's going to sit their starters. I was waiting for that one to be sitting there at my final pick.
Jonas.
Hey, by
how
the way,
does that feel?
Lee,
huh?
we're going to allow
how
him to make a pick
shaft,
and then
Jonas?
Go back on it. We're going to allow him to do that, Lee.
Classic
that's,
Brady.
That's going to happen, of course.
Let's take a pause and let's rewind and let's go through this. Jonas's ass incited that. Like you made that happen.
Thank
you instigated that.
I thought it was
so
in pen.
Now we're here.
Pencil.
Now we're here.
God.
That was totally my pick.
That's
so,
the one I wanted
to. So now
too.
my last decision will now be.
Hold on a second.
Eddie's next.
Oh,
wow.
Is Eddie?
I'll give the shaft.
Eddie, Eddie, you should be surprised by line cutting LeVar. Yeah. He's the guy who had Christmas lights up in July.
I'm sorry. That's right. Yeah. I'm sorry, Eddie. I'm sorry. Somebody was standing in front of you. Didn't see you.
I was going to sing your praises, too, for calling out Jonas for,
yes.
for doing
I'm
that.
I'm sorry.
Because I was going to pick week
Damn
18.
It.
Now I can't pick week 18.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give the shaft to everybody here and say they're not going to win on any of them.
No,
I'm completely going outside the lines. They're not going to win any game.
Eddie, you have to pick one.
You got to pick one
to keep with the integrity of the game.
You got to pick one.
Come on, Eddie.
All right, fine. Then since Brady took the one I was going to pick, I'll pick the one that he previously picked, and I'll say the Lions win at Seattle.
That's a good one,
too.
That's a good one,
because I wanted nothing more than for that to hit, and Brady walked back on it just so he could live with that regret the rest of his life that he lost.
Here's what I'm
going to
say in a shocking feeling of knowing that this is some real junk. I say they win this week. And here's the reason why I say they beat the Vikings at home is because there's actually still a little bit of fight left in them.
And they're getting extra rest.
So I'm saying this is their best chance to win a game. How about that? Is at home against the Minnesota Vikings, who are licking their wounds after taking a nail. And they can and will and do tend to drop games like this.
All right.
That's true.
I guess that leaves last, but definitely not least. Here we go. Everybody is
waiting. Who
are
you going to take?
Everybody is waiting to see who I will
take. Who are you
going to
take?
And I, Jonas Knox, will
That's
take.
Right. The shaft.
Ooh, ooh, yes. It's going to sound so horrible coming out their mouth.
Disguised as the Lions beating the number one seed in the NFC, the Arizona Cardinals, in week 15.
Ew.
Just the worst pick on the board, but I will have to be stuck with the Arizona Cardinals being the first victim of the Dan Campbell Detroit Lions in 2021. And there it is.
What if you happen to win this, though? That would be the best.
God.
I would be so happy for
week
you.
Week 18 was so juicy. It was so juicy.
Ew.
And it's just been
Ew.
Gosh, if I call an NFL game, I feel like my name's written all over that.
I know. I can't wait to see if that happens and plays out. That's gonna be fun. All right, so there it is. Just a little bit of radio gold. Some radio history, as a matter of fact. Nobody in the history of sports talk radio has ever done the Lions fantasy draft like we just did. The first win fantasy
that's
draft.
The first ever for a 17-game season, 18 total weeks. No one's ever done that before.
History.
Yeah. It's literally historic.
It's the week that we started. This is a new team.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of just
it's history.
Yeah.
A ton of history.
Yeah.
Here.
I was going to try to help you out there, but it didn't seem right coming out of my mouth, so I stopped.
Yeah.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.